When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger, where you'll find over 30,000 mouthwatering choices that excite your inner foodie. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week. You can also save up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with fuel points. More savings and more inspiring flavors make shopping Kroger worth it every time. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.
Another day is here, and you're ready for it. What to wear? Check. Breakfast, lunch, and dinner? Check. Planning for what's next and how to save for it? That's where Bank of America can help. For your financial to-dos, Bank of America has experts ready to help get you closer to your goals. Get started at one of our local financial centers or 24-7 in our mobile banking app. Find a location near you at bankofamerica.com/talktous. What would you like the power to do? Mobile banking requires downloading the app and is only available for select devices. Message and data rates may apply. Bank of America NA, member FDIC.
This is iFanboy Special Edition Shazam! Fury of the Gods.
Say my name, no one is around you. Say baby, I love you, if you ain't running game. Say my name, you acting kinda shady. Ain't calling me baby, why the sudden change? Say my name, if no one is around you. Say baby, I love you, if you ain't running game. Say my name, you acting kinda shady. Ain't calling me baby.
Hello, welcome to iFanboy Special Edition Shazam! Fury of the Gods. My name is Connor Kilpatrick, and I am here with Philadelphia's own Paul Montgomery.
That's me, Philly's own.
And that's it. We're the only ones who wanted to see the movie. No one else wanted to see it.
There was an email chain out, and the others very quickly established that they will not be seeing this movie.
So, it seems like, Paul, you and I are the movie team now, because we saw Thor, we saw Black Adam, we saw Ant-Man.
We're cinephiles. We love Hollywood. We love the movies.
It's true.
We love the medium of film.
So let's talk about Shazam! Fury of the Gods. There'll be spoilers in this conversation. This is, I was going to say possibly the last, but if not, that's Flash. This is maybe the second to last of the Snyderverse films of the original sort of DC cinematic universe. And I had forgotten, because of COVID time and COVID brain, that the original Shazam was 4 years ago. It's a long time between films.
And I was thinking about it. It came out this around the same time as the Captain Marvel movie.
Yes.
And this is also coming out around the same year as a Captain Marvel movie, which is kind of interesting.
That is weird. And this, Black Adam as well.
Yeah, and this one is
and
focused
Flash. It's
on
a big year for lightning bolts.
Yeah. Well, and this one is also more so than even Billy Batson and Shazam himself. This is a Shazam family or Shazamily focused film.
Oh, no.
Whereas the Marvels is a Captain Marvel family of characters film. So that's kind of interesting that the sequels both went in that direction.
I just want to point out that as we record this, it is Saturday morning. Paul and I both saw the movie Friday. And there may be some gardening going on in the background because my neighbors decided to start leaf blowing. So if you hear that,
if it sounds like Connor is getting a root canal, that's actually a leaf blower.
I apologize. So this film is directed by David F. Sandberg. He did the original film. It's written by Henry Gayden and Chris Morgan. Henry Gayden was one of the writers on the original film. And as Paul was pointing out to me last night, Chris Morgan, he's on the Fast and the Furious films, correct?
Yeah, he is. I thought he was a co-writer, but mostly he's a writer and a producer, sometimes executive producer, way back since Tokyo Drift.
Oh, wow.
So he's had his hands in all of those movies since way back, since it really became like a franchise, capital F franchise. So
he is involved. If you have a movie about family, you call him up.
And yeah, they even reference the Fast and Furious movies and the idea of family in this film. So there's a lot of snake eating its own tail kind of stuff happening with this. There's also some Annabelle references if you're a fan of the Conjuring verse, because the director Sandberg, who's a Swedish director, also did Annabelle Creation. And you do see in Billy's pediatrician's office, there is an Annabelle doll in the background there. So that's why that's there, if you're wondering. It's an interesting
cameo. And isn't Mary Marvel in those movies? or one of the movies?
Yes, the actress who plays both Mary, not Marvel, Mary, right. Well, they gave her a different last name. She is in Annabelle Creation, at least. I don't know if she's in all of them or.
Yeah, that's what I thought. Okay.
But yeah, Mary Bromfield.
Right. Well, that's her, like, Billy Batson name. That's not her super.
Right.
We're going to get into all how it.
They've
broken these characters in the same way they've broken Batman. So in the first film, it was all about Billy getting his powers, you know, meeting him in his world, meeting his family, fighting Dr. Savannah, his family, his extended family of foster kids getting their powers and having a whole Shazam family, none of whom had superhero names. And then now we are at least 4 years later in our time, and they're established in Philadelphia as the Protectors, although it seems like Philly's not quite sure what to make of them, but they are, are the heroes of Philadelphia.
Strong public opinion about lots of things here. So as Wolf Blitzer notes, one of his several cameos, we call them the Philly Fiasco or the Philadelphia Fiascos.
Like a sports team.
Yeah.
And they end up getting entangled with the Daughters of Atlas, who are original characters. They are not from the comics. Literally the goddess daughters of the god Atlas have come.
The Titan Atlas, yeah.
For the staff that was broken at the end of the first film. That was his staff.
And it's sort of like, it's essentially like it's Greek mythology. So they're also tied in with Wonder Woman, and that'll play in later. But there's some kind of convoluted lore going on in this movie. And it's best not to think about it too hard, but yeah, these Daughters of Atlas are based on actual, if not mythological individuals, mythological groups. So
right. That's
also kind of odd, but yeah.
I don't know if they said it or not, but it was a little unclear how much time had passed since the first film. I mean, they're all still in high school. Billy is now 17. I don't remember how old he was in the first film. And it kind of shows how difficult it is when you base a film about a kid hero around a kid actor. Suddenly the kid actor is an adult.
Yeah, they grow like weeds. And then Mary was just starting college, and she's in college in this.
Well, she didn't go to college, remember?
So she didn't go to college.
She gave up college.
Or she was accepted into college?
No, yeah, she was going into college, but she didn't go. And so here,
her
issues is she's feeling stifled because she gave up going to college.
Mm-hmm.
And that's part of the problem for her. That's part of her story. It's interesting. I mean, like, you know, I think we enjoyed the first film, if I recall correctly. You know, it's cute. It's funny. It was funny. It was charming.
It's very charming. Yeah. And it came in the midst of all the, you know, all the dark, gritty Snyderverse stuff. And, you know, people saying, you know, if you're doing a superhero movie, it doesn't have to be so dark. It doesn't have to be so edgy. And this came along and this fulfills exactly, you know, that it's very refreshing in that it's mostly, you know, all ages, family friendly, aside from some weird quirks. And this continues that.
I found myself ultimately having fun and enjoying it, but there were some things about it that kind of bugged me. And then I just found myself wondering like what the point was. I mean, I know ultimately the point of all these movies is just to make money. That's their products that they sell. But, you know, 4 years have passed. I don't know, there wasn't a huge clamoring for Shazam. It wasn't like it was a gigantic blockbuster. And I didn't find this story super compelling. And so I was like, it just was like, okay, I mean, this is fine. It's fine. It's a good time at the movies. But it wasn't like, wow, this was this amazing story that they came up with for Shazam. It was somewhat similar, you know, to the last one in terms of the overall arc.
Right. That's basically where I'm at. It's I thought it was charming and I had a good time with it. But yeah, I think the novel thing about it and where they've gone with it and where they might have continued to go if things hadn't been shaken up the way they were. It's interesting to see a family of superheroes and to do this foster family with all of these different. And it's a large ensemble. And the thing that differentiates this from the previous one, I think, is obviously you don't have to do an origin story, but they do have to, like, when they set up the all the kids being superheroes in the last one, that was cool. But then you're like, okay, now we got to do a whole film and we have to give everybody, you know, time and attention. And I think, you know, Billy kind of fades to the background a little bit.
Yes.
Which I was cool with, but there's less of a, I mean, they're definitely going for a particular arc where he feels like he has imposter syndrome and also the concern about aging out of the foster system.
Right. I thought that was actually really well done. I found myself getting drawn into the emotion of those scenes. You know, Billy's whole thing was his dad left him. It was a kid. His mom abandoned him. And that was his whole thing in the first movie. And now he thinks he's going to be cast out again because he's about to turn 18. Mm-hmm. And I found myself really feeling for him and his mother, his foster mother, and his siblings. I thought they handled all that really well in terms of like an emotional story.
I think so too. I think it's a tough thing to do for a feature. If this was like a series, like whether it's animated or live action, they could give like, you know, here's a Darla episode, you know, right. Here's a Eugene episode.
Correct.
But I think they still do a pretty good job giving everybody moments and establishing who these characters are, and then also establishing who, you know, how they differentiate between them and then their adult forms. Because it's aside from Mary, who in the first film was played by two different actresses.
Yeah,
she had a kid actress, and then a different actress played her as her adult superhero form. Now it's Grace Caroline Curry, who played the kid form in the first one, is now playing both the kid and the adult superhero form.
Oh, I mean, she's an adult. She's 18 or over 18.
Right. Yeah,
so
yeah. Right.
Should have had the other actress playing her if that's how they were going to do it. I actually found that really confusing because I remember watching the first film and having a hard time even telling if there was two different actresses because they were very similar looking and being preoccupied with trying to figure out if it was two different actresses. And then in this one, being like, is it two different actresses? It looks the same. And I remember being very confused and just because they were so similar looking.
I think she's good in either role. I think she can play both the, you know, regular, you know, person and then the superhero character. I think she's, you know.
No, she's great. It's just that if Captain Marvel is Billy in his adult form, then that should be all of them. So Mary should have just been the same actress in the first film. Either way, if she was an adult already, if she was 18. Anyway, that's
she was
small.
Like on the cusp, I guess. So yeah. I don't know. But
I found myself actually, of all the characters, liking Shazam the least.
Yeah.
Because it felt like they turned the dial up on his annoying side. And he didn't seem to have grown or matured at all. And also, when he was Billy, he seemed to be much less manic and more mature than he was in his Shazam form.
Yes.
Which, in the comics, he's never been like this. He's always been slightly childlike, but not like a manic teenager.
Yeah, and I think it's really a fine line to walk
that up, this one.
I felt like, if anything, I missed Asher Angel as the Billy Batson in the younger
he's
version.
Hardly in it,
seeing him more. He's hardly in it. And I would try to imagine the stuff Zachary Levy was doing, like coming out of Asher Angel's mouth. And I was like, yeah, he doesn't, I feel like
doesn't fit.
Zachary Levy's doing like a much more heightened version.
It felt like he was almost doing Freddie Freeman, you know?
Yeah.
Freeman's a much more manic, zany teenage personality, and Billy Batson isn't. And so when he was an adult, I was like, why is he acting like this? He was almost, I mean, I haven't seen the original in a while. I caught like 5 minutes of it last night on TV, but I don't remember him being this over the top in terms of, I'm a wacky teenager. And it's just kind of frustrating.
What I remember of it, it was more of like the like wide-eyed awe of,
right.
Oh my God, look what I can do. And this is more him being comfortable as himself, but it feels like he's putting on a character.
Yeah.
It was a little grating. I would say that actually Freddy is almost more the protagonist.
Yes. Oh, yeah.
For most of the film, until you get sort of to the end with Billy's sacrifice, it's mostly about Freddy. And I feel like there are pros and cons to that for the performance. Let me ask you this. When when Freddy runs into Anne, this new girl at school.
Yeah.
Did
Played
you...
Rachel Zegler
from...
West Side Story.
West Side Story, yes, the remake. Wonderful singer and actress.
Yeah,
I like her a lot.
She's great.
Did you clock immediately that, this is another daughter
of
Atlas?
That's the problem. The problem is the pre-movie, you know, promotion spoiled that. I don't remember if it was in the trailer, but it was certainly in like either an article or something I read or something. But she was, you know, they showed her in her costume and said she was playing one of the daughters of Atlas. So when she showed up, I was like, okay.
We're flipped on this episode because usually I'm the one who's spoiled a lot by the promotional stuff. I did not know that going in. Mm. But immediately I was like, the way that she was like very quickly latching on to Freddie and taking his side and things was like, oh, this, she's one of the villain characters, or at least one of the, and I thought of her as a villain. Like I was thinking, oh, she's like playing along with him because she's trying to trick him.
Oh, interesting.
And what you actually find out later on is that, oh no, she actually is genuinely like, you know, she has an affinity for the, I don't know if she's attracted to him, but she is impressed by him and his heroism and his sense of self. But the only way that that works is because she's from another world. In any other scenario, if this was like, I was like, she is undercover and she is pretending to like him because he is very manic. And I found him kind of obnoxious.
I wonder if that's because we're getting older and all teenagers are
maybe
obnoxious.
But the other thing is also that, and that you spoke to this a little bit earlier, the kids are older.
Yeah.
So some of the stuff, like I think Darla's actress pulls it off, that she's just a sweet person.
Yeah.
But I think with like Freddie, I was like, some of the stuff that I gave him leeway for in the first film, he's older, he's a much, you know, bigger guy. It's not as cute and precocious anymore. Now it's kind of
obnoxious. Yeah, that was, I think, the biggest frustration for me, is that none of these characters who clearly were older, you know, they were, I don't even, you know, I don't care what the time in the original film was, they're all the two guys, at least, you know, Freddie and Billy, are like a foot taller. They don't act like it. They still act like they're 14 or whatever they were in the first film, 13. And it's like, you guys have not changed at all. And I mean, they aged him, because again, Billy was supposed to be 17, and he does. Hell, at 17, I was in college.
Mm-hmm.
I couldn't have acted like that. It was just weird and kind of annoying. But, you know, through the arc of the film, you mentioned Billy's sacrifice at the end. I thought that was really well done.
Yes.
I thought it was really heartfelt. I thought it made sense. I thought the scene with his mother, who can't touch him because of the force field, saying goodbye was really good. I mean, I thought for all of his frustrating mannerisms and hyperactive energy, I thought that his turn to sacrifice himself to save everyone else was a good one and well done.
And that's where I just wish that we got more of Billy, like the Asher Angel version, like that, to the point where before he goes off, his mother says, can I see my Billy? Can I see, you know, your younger self?
Yeah,
and he has to turn back into it. And which is, you almost wish that he'd already been in that form,
right?
So she didn't have to be like, hey, can you, because it's a little bit of like a contrivance, but no, I think that bit is good. It's just leading up to that, it was more Freddy's movie than Billy's movie,
for sure.
So they did sort of a swap.
He had the romance plot, he had the sort of, you know, being entangled with the bad guys plot, he teamed
hanging
up with
out
the
with
wizard. Yeah, like,
yeah,
he was sort of the main character. I was really distracted by the costume change. They gave all the characters these weird white little almost patches on their costumes. And at first I thought that the costumes were old and ripped up, until I realized, no, they just gave them for some reason these little white tags all over them.
Oh, they're like, I thought they looked like pockets. Like they're like, they look like little slits. Like, I don't know.
Yeah. First I thought, oh, Billy's costume, you know, he hasn't been able to repair it. It's got holes in it. But no, that's just what they did. They gave him also almost like this sort of wing detail on his chest. I don't know why they have to constantly tinker with the costumes. They're not selling toys anymore. I, in general, just really hate the modern superhero costume that looks like it's plastic.
Yes. They have very boxy boots.
Yeah. The sort of the last time they tried to really make it look like what it should was Christopher Reeve. And ever since then, it's like these, like, these hyper detailed, heavily molded plastic costumes. And I just wish someone would try something else. They all look the same.
What's the Superman and Lois show? The current one? Is it Superman and Lois,
Superman
or is it Clark?
It's Superman.
Lois, okay.
Yeah.
When he had his like original costume.
Yes.
That looked great. I love that.
Yeah. All of them look like that. I mean, try something new, because every superhero costume looks the same.
Hmm.
I also, in the first film, because I caught it last night, they gave Billy the dual cape, you know, from the comics. And here he's just has a long white cape, which is twice as long as it should be on Captain Marvel. I'm sorry, Shazam. Did you catch the cameo?
Hard to miss.
Which, from the man on the street?
The man on the street.
Yeah, Michael
when,
Gray.
When Billy was confronting Calypso, Lucy Liu's character, I believe. Yeah. He's in like background. He has like featured shots, but then he's also in the background. He's just kind of like, okay, I guess I'm just going to wander away now because there's a dragon in front of me. But yeah, very conspicuous. Like, even if you didn't know that there was previously a Shazam anything,
TV show,
you would know that this guy is somebody.
Yeah, so the original Shazam TV show, which was on in 1974, 75, 76, featured Michael Gray playing the Captain Marvel version, and he shows up in his T-shirt from the show.
I guess that was... And this is a 71-year-old man, so like with moppy brown hair and
really baggy.
Like, this is clearly somebody.
And you know, the whole running joke throughout both films is that none of these characters have names because they broke it at DC. They still don't really have names. And that's the constant running joke. I mean, Freddie Freeman calls himself Captain Every Power.
Which does pay off when Billy says, I'm Captain Every Power Jr.
Yes.
That was a very sweet callback to that. I like that in that moment.
They're all shouting out to Shazam from the street, and Michael Gray calls him Captain Marvel. And I was surprised they let him do that.
Mm.
I thought that was nice. It just, when it's the Marvel family, it's Captain Marvel, Captain Marvel Jr., and Mary Marvel. It's been many, 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 many years. They haven't figured out a way to fix that. There's no solution. When Mary Marvel shows up in the comics, she's not called anything other than Mary.
Right. And also, like, when the wizard at the end says, your superhero name is Shazam, and they're like, oh, that is difficult because if he says that word, there's electricity. And the cross stitch says, no Shazamming in the house. I like that.
Yeah.
That runner.
They also, like, this is not really related to the name, but to his character. He has the wisdom of Solomon. There's a whole joke in here about how he's an idiot. So where is the wisdom of Solomon? He has it. Someone has got it.
He has wisdom in his heart.
That's not how wisdom works. In his head.
The wizard said, and I don't like that it's just the wizard.
Exactly.
The wizard's name is also Shazam. Right. But like, I wish they could just come up with something. But I guess if they change it, then that's conceding defeat.
That someone like needs to fix
or showing weakness or something. It's a problem. And like, as much as I love that it's, you know, this mixed family and everybody has their own last name, it makes it complicated. And you wish that it could, you know, be Captain Marvel Jr., you know, or like, and then Lieutenant Marvel, Commander Marvel. I don't even know.
Well, in the comics, they don't have the powers anymore. We whittled it back down to just... I mean, Billy and Mary, but I assume Freddie, but I haven't seen Freddie in forever. So the other ones, Eugene and Darla and Pedro, don't have the powers anymore, at least for right now. So I don't know.
And it's interesting because it's something different. There are plenty of teams in comics. There are plenty of found families in superhero comics. But to have like an actual family and they all have the same powers, but just a different sensibility about each of them. You could do something cool with that, but they just haven't found their way, unfortunately. What did you think of the Daughters of Atlas themselves?
I think they were fine. You know, it's Helen Mirren and Lucy Liu and Rachel Zegler. And, you know, again, Helen Mirren from Fast and Furious.
Mm-hmm. Hobbs and Shaw.
You know, they had their sibling spat where they all had different goals. The original goal is to get their father's magical staff back, which Billy broke in half and is now on display in a museum. And, you know, they all have different reasons for wanting it back, and they're all different levels of evil.
I like that dynamic.
That worked.
Yeah.
Because they weren't all just a monolith.
I like that they weren't a united front. Yeah.
Yeah.
And, so, and I liked that, you know, that the where Calypso feels like she's almost the lieutenant, and Helen Mirren, you know, she has seniority. Right. You think she's the boss, but then you have this turn. And I think that arc, you know, worked pretty good.
You're expecting Helen Mirren's character to be the bad guy.
And I like that they were all in. You know, Helen Mirren was all in. Lucy Liu was all in.
Yeah. I thought they were fine. I mean, one of the things that we always say, and this was a problem in the first film, even though Dr. Savannah was the main bad guy, was that so many of these superhero films devolve into giant CG creature battle in the third act. Mm-hmm. And that was a big problem in the first one because Savannah unleashed like the seven sins, and they were just these uninteresting brown CG monsters. Here, at least they had a dragon, which I thought was cool. And he still was basically fighting against the sisters. The best of these films feature a hero fighting a villain, and they're both human.
Mm-hmm.
Captain America and Winter Soldier, Batman and the Joker. Like, when it's, you know, human fighting human and not human fighting CG creature, it's better. Even though, again, there's a dragon he fights, but he's also fighting against these sisters. I thought it was better when you have a human to face off against, even just to act against, is better.
Yeah, and even if it's like a super soldier human, like Killmonger is a great villain.
Right, just a human being to fight.
Even Kingpin, great villain.
Yeah.
And a lot of fun to watch in these. Yeah, I tend to agree with that.
This is unusually brutal at times, especially for the vibe. I mean, I remember in the first film, those seven deadly sins came and wiped out the boardroom pretty.
Yeah, that went hard. That was like whoa.
Here, like, you know, the sisters unleash the, you know, like griffins and harpies and, you know, the sort of creatures of myth.
Minotaurs and cyclopses. And this, I like that the cyclops is like a Ray Harryhausen style cyclops. Yeah.
And then one point, like, you know, they're terrorizing and people are running. And we really focus in on this one woman who's in a car and then she gets away. And then, you know, we really sort of follow her journey. And then she gets like impaled and tossed to the side. I was like, fuck.
Yeah.
You know, and then the same thing with Dietrich Bader. You know, the teacher at their school where
that they make him
jump off the roof. And I was like, Jesus.
Wild. Because it was like, oh, Dietrich Bader. I wonder what he's going to be up to. And like, you know, I don't know if he's in there. You know, he's voiced Batman and mm-hmm. a few different things. But, you know, like, he's somebody that you recognize. And I was like, oh, I wonder, you know, what role he's going to play. And then like he walks up. I was like, surely he's not going to. Oh, OK. They did. They killed him.
There was even a splat sound.
Right.
It's interesting because these films, they're not all ages, but they have that sort of feel. But then, you know, in the same thing in the first one where there was that sort of out of nowhere brutality, here it happened several times where it's like, I was shocked that they killed that woman that way. Just like stab, toss. I was like, oh, shit.
Biggest shock for me was that they went with the joke when Darla was riding the unicorn and she said, taste the rainbow, mother, and then they cut it off.
Oh, I think they went as far as motherfuck. There was a F-U-C sound.
Right. Like there is no ambiguity about what she was saying. And I was like, you know what? Maybe give that to a different character. This is not me being a prude about her being a little girl. But it's like, she's a very sweet character. I don't feel like she would say that.
Yeah.
I think give that to somebody else. That was kind of rough. But that was like, I did like, if I had, you know, Coca-Cola in my mouth, like if I had just taken a sip, that would have been spattered all over the place. Took me aback.
There was a lot going on. As you said, there's a lot of characters to serve us here. I was torn between feeling like it was happening all too quickly and feeling like they did a pretty good job of balancing everything. And so, you know, the sequence where in the beginning she's making a diorama of a bunch of unicorns fighting something, I don't remember what it was. And then it turns out that the most deadly of all of the mythical creatures is the unicorn. So they find a bunch of unicorns and they get them on their side by giving them Skittles because they like ambrosia and it's the closest they got. And they use them to rise in battle.
Okay, sure.
Sure. And even then, after she says, taste the rainbow, motherfuckers, she then impales one of those guys with her unicorn. I was like, all right, geez.
I was like, damn.
These kids are going to need a therapist.
I think one way that they kind of soften, if a little, they don't make the monsters like super corporeal. They're kind of like made out of stone.
Yeah.
So like, it's not gory.
The dragon's made out of wood.
Yeah. 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 I guess that's, I guess they're sort of wood, but like, they're, you know, there's harpies flying around, but there are, you know, people impaling each other, but like, it's not bloody.
Right. Right.
It's just like intense. but yeah. And like a dude gets picked up and then like the thing flies away and then drops him and he's screaming as he hits the ground. And
it's very Game of Thrones, Lord of the Rings.
There are very prominent cameos of like people who aren't famous. Like it feels like, oh, is that somebody? And I think it's like the director's wife or something, or like it's like someone we follow, but it's like an extra, but it's like they're a featured extra.
Right.
There's a lot of those moments.
I can't wait for like Bryce Harper to show up or something, like, you know. Because as you said, they kept focusing on these people. I kept waiting for like, here's a prominent member of the Phillies.
They were very, killed. And just like the unicorn, you know, thread that goes through the movie, there's a baseball thread for, you know, for Pedro. His mom wants him to get into something. So I guess because he's like more introverted, he's the quiet one. And so she's like, let's watch baseball. And he gets into baseball, but it's because he's attracted to the players.
I thought the scene where he comes out was also really good, where they're just like, everyone needs to be honest about, and then he doesn't realize we're talking about something else. He shouts out, I'm gay. And then they're like, yeah, we know.
Yeah, like, we know, bud. Yeah, that's cool. That was good. And like, they don't like have to like linger on it.
Just, yeah. I thought that was nicely done. I think the family dynamic is terrific. I think the parents are great.
Parents are dope. I really like those actors. I am very annoyed that I am older than the dad.
Cooper Andrews and Marta Milans play Victor and Rosa. Like, they're the kind of parents you want to have, you know, especially if you're in a found family situation. They're sort of the iconic foster family. They're
also
great.
Like, there's a weird bit where Mary was talking about, like, they're going to lose the house. But then later they say, we bought the house, which was just destroyed by the dragon coming out of it. And I thought there would be like follow up on that, like how they were able to do that. Not that that's like exciting, sexy stuff for a movie, but like, I don't understand exactly what that.
I think that's part of the problem is, like I said, there's just so much.
Yeah.
In the effort to give everyone a little something, they have to gloss over a lot. Just like, you know, we didn't really get to dive in. We saw way more of the parents in the first one because it was way more about Billy as opposed to Shazam. They kind of just had to give them. And they got to be part of the crew once they found out about their kids and have their battle truck or whatever, their battle van and run over a Minotaur. And as a film, I felt like it teetered on the edge of flying apart, but it never did.
Sure. Right.
I don't think it was a great movie.
No.
It's a problem when your lead character is kind of annoying to be around.
Mm-hmm. Well, it helps that there are so many characters that, you know, focus shifts to the other character. Like, if it was just Billy, like,
We'll get to the last two bits, which are the other cameo and then the post-credit sequence. Was there only one? I didn't stay for the end.
There's two.
Oh, man, fuck.
There's a mid-credit and a post-credit. I was the only one who stayed.
I had things to do. I was the only one to stay for the mid-credit one. I had things to do. I had to be somewhere. And I was like, what are the odds? And I should have stayed.
People stayed for the mid-credits. And then the lights went on. And I was checking my phone to see if there were two. And it said there's two. And then like I had to it was one of the theaters with recliner seats. Mm-hmm. I had to decline my seat because the guy came along and he was like sweeping. So like it was just me. So I was like, okay, I'll get up and I'll just walk to the back of the theater and watch.
I'm an idiot. I always stay at the end, but I literally had to be somewhere. I had to go pick something up.
Credits were long too, or they felt long.
Actually, you know what? Let's flip what I was going to do. Let's talk about the scenes and then we'll end with sort of.
Okay.
So the first thing is, you know, Billy as a red-blooded man is somewhat obsessed with Wonder Woman. He has dreams about her. Mm-hmm. He's constantly talking about her. There's a very prominent dream where they're on a date in Paris, but we only see her from like the back or the neck down in the same way we only saw Superman that way at the end of the first film.
Right.
And then the wizard invades his dream and takes over her face, which was really unsettling.
Yeah.
So then at the end, when Billy is supposedly killed to save everyone, you know, by absorbing the power of the staff.
And he is dead. They did
kill
him.
And he's dead. They buried him at what looks like Mount Olympus.
Yeah, I guess that's the idea.
And so his family's all there and the wizard, and they buried him. And also and Thea's there. And they say, you know, he could be resurrected if there were any gods left, but there are no gods left. And because Anthea's also lost her powers.
Right.
And then, you know, Wonder Woman Gal Gadot appears and Deus Ex Machina resurrects Billy, resurrects the staff, gives Anthea back her powers. And all is right in the world. Billy makes a really cringy attempt at asking Wonder Woman out, and that doesn't go well for him. And it was fine. It felt like they wanted to make up for the weirdo Superman cameo in the first film, and it was nice to see her again.
Like it was like a fake out because it was like very clear in the Paris scene, which is a dream sequence. It's the wizard invading a dream that young Billy is having.
Yeah.
And so he takes on the form of Wonder Woman. And that's the only time you see above the neck is when his face is on there. And it's a funny
say
visual.
That this was also spoiled in a commercial.
Oh no.
I was literally watching something else and they had a commercial for the film come on and they showed her like in the scene where she's walking away. And I was like, oh fuck. That would have been nice to be surprised about. But so anyway, that was also spoiled.
So, like, I'm assuming that's not Gal Gadot, like, there for just that. That's like another actress.
No, that was there was a body double. She was in the credits.
Right. Okay. For the
dream sequence.
Okay, so they did the fake out, and it's sort of like, you know, they didn't actually have Henry Cavill for the first one. It's just a body double. But then you get the scene where she does show up. And the way that they write Billy, Shazam, in this movie, I was expecting him to be like, hey, where were you when we were fighting these guys in Philly with the dome for the final encounter and him having to die?
Right.
He says the uncomfortable things. And, you know, me as a viewer, that's what I'm expecting him to say. But so, yeah, so it's they have this weird runner about the foster parents being like, hey, our boys are attracted to older women.
Well, yeah, because their foster mom's super hot.
Right.
Yeah, because Freddie is interested in Anne and Thea. And
she was like 6,000 years old, they establish.
And Billy's, I mean, are they surprised Billy's attracted to Wonder Woman? I mean, everyone is attracted to Wonder Woman. So that happens. So then the movie ends. Mid-credits is two characters who I didn't really recognize because I didn't really watch any of the TV shows.
Oh, okay.
Show up. I think I recognized them from they were in the Suicide Squad film, right?
Yes. They're most prominent in Peacemaker.
Right.
And they're also in Black Adam, or she is at least.
Was she?
She's like the Maria Hill when they take Black Adam to Antarctica or wherever and like put him on ice. She's like the government attaché or handler.
So they show up and they want to recruit Billy. He thinks he's being recruited for the Justice League, but no, they're recruiting him for the Justice Society. And that's what the mid-credit sequence is. The team that does not have Wonder Woman on it.
And I don't know why they have to track him to like the woods.
Right. Where he's
like, I was like, why is this set here? But he's like at his like, I don't know, little woodland hangout, like Little Rascals kind of like clubhouse. And
which he already has a magical clubhouse.
The Rock of Eternity. Why aren't you hanging out there?
So we'll get to my bigger thoughts on that after. What was the post-credit sequence?
All right. Post-credits is a callback to the first film's post-credits with Dr. Silvana in prison.
Oh, right.
And, oh God, what's it called? The worm villain comes in to the window and he's like, I've been waiting here for 2 years. I'm 57 years old. Like, we've got to move. And the worm is like, Mr. Mind is like, I move very slowly. I don't have legs, really. I just kind of slither. But that won't be a problem for long. And Silvana's like, yeah, let's do it. Let's go. Let's go. And then he's like, but I have one more thing to do. And then he starts slithering away very slowly. The joke being that this is never going to get paid off because
Well,
this reality is going away.
I guess that tells you it's been 2 years since the first movie in movie time. So that tells you that. So then, yeah, I mean, there's no need for a third one. We'll get to the bigger sort of landscape. But, you know, not every film needs to be a trilogy. I think that's what Bob Iger said at the last earnings call. I think they're talking about Ant-Man. But sometimes it's okay just to have one or two movies about a character. I don't think anyone's clamoring for a third Shazam film. If they make one, I'll watch it. But if they say this is it, I also won't be upset about it. I really hope they just wipe this slate clean, Paul. That was what frustrated me about the mid-credit sequence being tied into James Gunn's TV show was that I really think what he needs to do is he has to wipe the slate clean and start everyone over.
Mm-hmm.
He has to recast every actor, every character. And I know he's already made his own things with Suicide Squad and Peacemaker. And obviously, Viola Davis isn't going anywhere. I really feel like these characters, and Zach Levy is, I think, friends with him. So I don't know. I just feel like everyone, just for the sake of getting the taste of the Snyderverse out of everyone's mouth, they need to wipe it out.
Yeah, I'm wondering if they're just saying like, oh, maybe we'll just keep him for like Peacemaker season two or whatever they're doing with Waller, like TV stuff, like just as like a comedy character.
I don't know.
Or maybe they're just saying like, let's keep our options open.
It's just bizarre to start a basic Avengers scenario where they, you know, go around recruiting heroes for the Justice Society. Like, why would you start that now when theoretically you're rebooting the universe?
Right.
You know, it's a very specific and pointed scene to put in.
Unless it's like a weird inside joke about, hey, let's, you know, we're wrapping these up. Let's start doing the Sam Jackson thing. Let's start doing that as just,
I
like
just found myself going, you know, this has been fun. I've enjoyed these, but let's try a different take on Captain Marvel.
Yeah.
I'm sorry, Shazam. Let's try a different take on all these characters.
It's tricky because like I would be totally fine with them doing their own new version of Superman. Nothing against Henry Cavill. I'm ready to. There's nothing I want to keep about that. There's nothing I want to keep about their Flash. But then there's stuff like I feel bad because I think Gal Gadot is a good Wonder Woman.
Yeah.
The second movie sucked, but I like this Shazam family and I wish that they could do something with that. But, I feel like it would feel weird in a way that rebooting Superman doesn't feel weird for them to reboot Shazam. Mm. And I don't know why. I have no affinity for Zachary Levi. It's more about the family itself.
I just think that if you start picking and choosing,
then
you're running into issues.
Totally.
If you're going to do it, just do it with everybody.
Top line, I agree with that.
Yeah. Like, we're going to do it all over, except we're going to keep Zachary Levi and we're going to keep Gal Gadot. It's like, okay. I mean, I can wrap my head around that, but a lot of people won't be able to.
Sure.
And I just think at the end of the day, if you're starting over, and also they want to make everyone younger because part of the problem at Marvel was they cast all these really great actors in their 30s and 40s, and they aged out real quickly.
Mm.
And so he's already said he wants Superman to be a younger actor.
Right.
They have to start going back. You know, Christian Bale was 29 when he played Batman in Batman Begins. I think they need to go back.
I refuse to believe that. Okay.
Yeah. I think they need to go back and start. Because they, if they want to do any kind of long form storytelling, they're going to need younger actors to start with.
Mm-hmm.
I just think they need to start everybody over. I mean, you know, I don't know. It's all complicated. It's all convoluted. I don't envy him his job, but you know, if you're going to do it, do it. If you're going to do it halfway, what happens if you do it halfway? You get the new 52. They didn't fully reboot.
Yes,
and it was all convoluted and kludgy, and 100%. Didn't really work. So,
no more half measures.
Right,
got a whole asset.
Blow it up. All right. So that was Shazam Fury of the Gods. Let's rate it out of 5 stars ratings.
Oh, boy. Oh, boy. Okay. People were aghast at my rating for Quantumania. I saw on the Discord.
Yeah.
They're like, it's so low. Even after like hearing his, you know, reasonings. Like,
I don't think people were aghast at the low rating. I think they were aghast that the rating didn't seem to match what you're saying. On
right.
The show. But that's, I mean, because people don't like that movie. I'm an outlier. I enjoyed this. What did I give Ant-Man? I don't remember.
2.5?
Did
is
I?
That right?
I don't remember.
Or was it higher?
It doesn't really matter. This is just an entertainment show. I'm going to give it this film. It's definitely not a 4-star movie, but I feel like 3 is maybe too low.
Okay, interesting. I was at 2.75.
Okay.
I felt
maybe
it
was at 3.1.
Because I feel like the first one is a 3.
Mm-hmm. But we really liked the first one. I don't remember what we graded it. I should make a spreadsheet, but I don't have time for that. I'm going to give this a 3.195.
Okay.
And I don't know what the first one was, but I've got to believe we did higher than a 3.
Can't let ourselves go there.
No, can't be comparative.
Always
it's
forward.
Be in the moment.
Always forward.
So that's Shazam Fury of the Gods. At the theater, I saw a trailer for Spider-Man, which Into the Spider-Verse or Across the Spider-Verse.
Which they did not play that
I hadn't
me.
Seen yet. Well, I went to an AMC, so I saw all the trailers.
Oh, okay.
And I saw a trailer for the Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtles, which actually looked
that
as interesting
awesome.
As Spider-Man in terms of animation. The next big film release, well, Paul and I will be back for the Batman, the Doom, the King, the Gotham animated brain trust review sometime in the next month.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know exactly when that's going to be. It depends on when it comes out in digital. But the next film is actually Spider-Man Across the Spider-Verse, I believe, in
is it? Okay.
June.
Well, I'm definitely excited for that.
And so, Paul, I mean, maybe just be Paul and I again. We'll be back for that one. And then I'm just, The Flash comes out a few weeks later, actually 2 weeks later.
Okay.
You know, we'll be back for all these. Blue Beetle's still on the schedule.
That's crazy.
Does it exist? Does
seen,
it not exist?
I haven't
Is it
seen
like
anything of that.
It's like Schrodinger's cat. It's like Schrodinger's movie. Does it exist? Does it not exist?
Okay.
Blue Beetle and the Marvels. I mean, to be fair, well, I guess we've seen a poster for the Marvels. We haven't seen anything for Blue Beetle.
Right.
I refuse to believe Blue Beetle's real and exists until it actually appears.
Yeah, no, exactly.
So we'll be back to cover the films, you know, as much as we can. And, of course, the animated shows and all that stuff in our special edition reviews. We, of course, have the Pick of the Week show every week where my pal Josh Flanagan and I review the week's comics. We have our Talksplode interview show, our Booksplode review show. In fact, the next Booksplode review show is going to be on Kingdom Come. And I will say, and I meant to say this earlier, watching this movie made me want to go back and read Jeff Johns' JSA books, because Captain Marvel was terrific in that book.
Oh, yeah.
It made me want to go back. That was him as more of an awkward, shy teenager than he was an obnoxious.
I mean, that was he gets involved with, or not,
Stargirl.
Billy Batson gets involved with Stargirl.
Right.
Right.
I want to go back and read those. Anyway, we'll be back as always. And until next time, I'm Connor.
I'm Paul. I know you say that I am assuming things. Something's going down, that's the way it seems. Shouldn't be the reason why you're acting strange. Nobody's holding you back from me. Cause I know how you usually do. When you're saying everything to me times two. Why can't you just tell the truth?